welcome back to Shatteringness. One of the items I heard in the news I wanted to comment on. We do have Glenn still with us. Glenn, I'd like to ask you a question. Is alcohol legal in America?
Yes, since prohibition was repealed.
Yeah, is tobacco legal in America?
In some places, overall, yes.
Yes, and how about firearms? Doesn't the U.S. Constitution make firearms legal in America?
Yeah, it shall not be infringed. That right shall not be infringed.
So why do we have a police force, a federal police force, called Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms?
It's a boondoggle to line pockets and impose oppression.
Perhaps. Why would someone working for this unnecessary organization have to have a machine gun when the average person can't have a machine gun, and yet they have one?
Well, because they have fond memories of using them in their video games a few years ago, and now they really want to use them in reality.
When the ATF had the machine gun stolen from their car and said, you know, we'll have new procedures in the future, the new procedure should be to eliminate the ATF, to eliminate machine guns amongst federal policing agencies entirely, and to authorize the people of the United States to have them if they wish to have them, because the Constitution authorizes them. We are really upside down in this one.
They can be had. There's a gun group that is having their a weekend machine gun, you know, camp out, you know, weekend thing coming up. But they require special permits and fees and all that.
Yeah,
sort of thing.
Yeah. Permitting necessary to have a machine gun is only available in certain states. Virginia, for example, you can get it. You can't get it in California, but you can get it in Virginia. You have to go to a bunch of classes, and you have to jump through a bunch of hoops. But you can get a permit, but then even then, you're limited on the capacity of that machine gun.
Well, there's a practice that greatly surpasses the use of machine guns anyway. It's called aiming. As much as they've proven that, you know, in combat, it's much, much more effective if you aim. I'd like to make one quick comment and then get off the air.
Okay.
To contrast these three options relative to these sexuality issues and the clitorectomies and all that stuff. Yahweh's stated plan in Torah, Prophets, and Psalms is for husband and wife to come together, to know each other interpersonally and physically, to derive pleasure from that relationship, and to start families. Okay? The Muslim, female circumcision or clitorectomy option is designed to create a woman who can have babies but not derive pleasure physically, and who probably doesn't have a very pleasurable relationship with her mate. Okay, and in America and the West, the LGBT communities are very much committed to interpersonal relationships, physical pleasure, but not generally not conceiving babies. Sometimes they adopt,
the only marriage that they promote is marriage between same-sex couples.
And so where is this cowardly American LGBT and feminist community when it comes to condemning this destruction of these capacities by a female circumcision? They fall silent.
The reason is because the LGBT communities are focused on conservative right-wing Christians.
Mm-hmm.
That is their foe, and since Islam is a foe of conservative Christians, the enemy of my enemy is my friend. It's between Shin Tzu and Machiavelli is what is guiding them. They don't have a moral compass. That's the problem. Hey, did you hear the story about Firefox that emerged yesterday?
No, I did not.
Oh, it's an amazing story. It made my blood just boil. The founder of Firefox is a free internet browser. It's the most dominant internet browser. I used it almost exclusively until Chrome, I think, is a better option today as a Google product. So I use Chrome mostly today. But the fellow that founded it decided that he was so magnanimous that he gave it away free. He is also the author of JavaScript, which is one of the most effective scripts today in terms of internet programming, also which he gave away free. And so he is the founder of Firefox. He is the founder of the author of the JavaScript. He was made a donation in the state of California to Proposition 8, which said that marriage ought to be between a man and a woman. He was recently asked to come back and to be part of the management of this company that he founded. And a firestorm erupted where it said, where the internet was aflame with people saying you cannot use the Mozilla Firefox browser, and if you were like trying to date on OkCupid, and if you came in via a Firefox browser, they said you're not welcome here because this man is homophobic and is opposed to giving equal rights to gay people.
So they presume to tell other people what software they have to use in order to be codependent to their boycott.
Firefox, Mozilla fired him. Fired the founder of their company and said that they were taking the high moral ground that they had to root out this evil, that they're embarrassed it took them so long to root out this evil, that to even have a discussion, to take a political position on a political issue is no longer acceptable. On this issue, you either comply or you're publicly disgraced. You lose your job, even if it's your company, and you're humiliated. It's the reason that I'm opposed to homosexual marriage, and I am. And I'm only opposed to it for one reason.
Because Yahweh says so.
Well, no, that's actually not the reason I'm opposed to it. Is that a valid reason to be opposed to it? Yes. My issue is that the way that they have handled the debate, that they're unwilling to have a debate, that they have so jury-rigged society, academia in particular, and the media, even business, that anybody's position other than their own is not to be accepted. They are so intolerant that they won't even allow someone to express a position if that position is, you know, what's wrong with civil unions for exactly the same freedoms and opportunities. Let's just call it by a different name. Their censoring of debate, their fear of debate, their promotion of homosexual behavior as normal and appropriate, even superior, and their unwillingness to allow any other voice is what I find reprehensible. Now, there's lots of things that Yahweh says we ought not do. This one doesn't make his top 10 list. It happens to be listed in with a whole bunch of things like bestiality, and it's listed in with incest and the like. And he has a whole list of things. He says, you ought not do this. This is not normal. This is not appropriate. This is not good. And, you know, my view there, and that's the thing that you mentioned, Glenn, my view there is that it isn't my job to tell people they can't do something just because God says it's not good for you to do. And the reason for that is because we all do things that God says aren't good for us to do. And we ought to be free to do that, because God's got a solution for all of that, and the solution is the covenant. And so, I think people ought to be free to do anything, even if it's bad for them. But when we censure debate, when we respond in this way, there's something dreadfully, dreadfully wrong with us. Well, it's my pleasure to have our good friend Larry back. Larry, I haven't heard from you for over a week. I know that you've been swamped in business, but it's always wonderful to see your name up there on the switchboard.
Yeah. Swamped in business isn't bad either, necessarily.
No, it's a good thing. You're responsible as a husband, as a dad, as a individual, and that's a good thing. I'm happy for you. But it's always, it doesn't change the fact that I'm glad to see you. Every time I see your name, I smile.
Well, I appreciate that. I wanted to mention that, I had to remove a guy from the Unpopular Truth group. NFB, because he really had a problem with the English noun God. In other words, saying Yahweh is God as opposed mm-hmm. to Yahweh is the Mighty One or Elohim. And you know, it's kind of interesting because the same fellow runs around and calls everything Yahweh says commands mm-hmm. and that we should obey, you know, mm-hmm. like Fido the dog.
Yes, and, obey.
Yeah, and... And that the Torah is law.
Yeah,
of course, Dode would have a problem with that because he said, you know, if the Torah brought freedom. I don't know of any laws that bring freedom.
Well, that's actually what Yahweh wrote in the first statement, the etched in stone. He said, you know, I was the one that freed you, and he's writing this as the summary of his Torah. So he's also of the opinion that it brings freedom.
Freedom, yeah. And, you know, I just wanted to mention this. And
oh, by the way, did your friend come up with a Hebrew word for obey since he thinks that the Torah is comprised of laws that need to be conveyed? Perhaps he's aware of the Hebrew word that Yah uses to tell us to obey him.
Yeah, well, we're not.
No.
Shama, Shamar.
You know, right. Yeah, there is no Hebrew word.
I didn't give 50 warnings, you know.
Right. There is absolutely no Hebrew word for obey, so it is impossible for us to do this. As it relates to that particular term, it actually gets into something I did want to cover, because... I promised I was going to deal with some of the questions that were raised by Adam Miller, who works for GCN and is committed to syndicating the Shattering Myths program. And one of the questions he asked is, you know, how do we really know God's name? You say it's Yahweh. How do you know that's the case? And before we get to that, let's deal with Elohim and God. Does Elohim mean Mighty One?
Yeah, it means mighty ones.
The mighty ones is what it means, right? Mighty ones.
Yeah, mighty ones, plural.
Right.
L
it's a
means
plural.
Mighty one. Yeah.
Right. It is the plural. The YM ending is the plural of Eloah. Eloah is contracted to El as a singular, meaning Almighty, but El is itself a contraction of Eloah, which is the Hebrew word to convey the concept or title of God. And we'll be back with that thought in a moment. Welcome back to Shattering This. We have Larry with us. Larry, does Yahweh use the Hebrew word, and it's a word, it's not a name, but does he use the Hebrew word Elohim to describe false gods?
Yes, he does.
Yeah, he says that false gods are Elohim.
Times.
Yeah,
several times.
So therefore, since he himself associates Elohim with false gods, what would be superior about using the Hebrew word Elohim versus the English word God?
I can only think of one place that it is substantial, and it's in Psalms when Yahusha says, yeah. El, why have you forsaken me? And then the very next line, when the Spirit has came back to home.
Mm-hmm.
It says Elohim, the plural.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, very interesting comment.
That's
there.
About the only place that I see any
where the distinction should be made. Now, another question for you is, when this person was talking to you, were they speaking to you in English or Hebrew?
English.
is your Facebook group predominantly English speaking or Hebrew speaking?
English speaking.
Okay.
Yes.
All right. If you were to use all Hebrew words, like Elohim happens to be a Hebrew word, why would that be appropriate for an English discussion? Why wouldn't the person just say? Why wouldn't they translate it? You're translating all the other Hebrew words so that an English-speaking audience can understand them. Why would you leave that word untranslated?
I have no idea, because it isn't a word, as you say. Yahweh talks about false Elohim. So if there's false Elohim, he's not saying I'm Elohim. He's saying I'm Yahweh.
Does Yahweh ever say that my name is Elohim, or that my name is El?
No, not ever.
No. Does he ever refer to El or Elohim or Eloah as a name?
No, it's always a title.
Right. So when God said that we should not memorialize, we shouldn't speak on behalf of false gods, does that mean that for some reason that we should take his use of the word Elohim out of context and redefine it as a name and then pretend like we can or cannot say it?
No, not at all. I mean, no, he's talking about words like grace, you know.
Well, of course. Yeah, those are names, and they're names of pagan gods, as is Amen. The next point I'd like to make is that there was a Canaanite god named El. That a Canaanite god chose the name El, or the people that conceived him chose the name El. So El is in fact the name of a pagan god,
Canaanite god. Yeah, and that is a fact. Yeah. And so again we have a problem, don't we? So I mean,
was there any pagan god ever named God?
Not that I'm aware of. There was a god.
Yeah.
You find.
Yeah. There was a G-O-T-T, that's in a Teutonic religion. There was a god named G-O-T-T, but that's a different name. And there was a Gad that is mentioned as well, pretty unknown to us today. There actually is no pagan god named God. And so it's a perfectly good word. It's not a name in English. It's just a word. It doesn't violate the name convention.
It's a noun.
And by the way, it's just a noun. It's a common noun. Yeah, it's just a common noun. Now, one of the things that's interesting here is that the purpose of Yahweh's testimony in this regard was not to promote the names of pagan gods or to speak on behalf of pagan gods. So that was the instruction. So when we use the common noun and word God to speak of this being Yahweh's title, one of many titles that he has, his favorite title happens to be Father, which we could communicate in Hebrew as Ab, or we could translate it into English as Father, then it can't rationally even be construed as a violation of that instruction, can it? And I'm quite certain that when I say Yahweh is God, which is what Yoel means, that I'm not speaking on behalf of or promoting a false god. In fact, it's impossible to get that distinction. So these people that are fixated on that, find another issue. Welcome back to Scattering Myths. I would like to speak just a moment more about El, Eloah, and Elohim. Most of the time that the title is used, a common Hebrew noun is used in the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms. It's written Elohi. And the alphabet that it was written in, Larry, actually defines the term. So if we wanted to have a complete and accurate translation of it, it would be as follows. It begins with the first letter of the Hebrew alphabet, Aleph, which was depicted as a ram's horn. It means that an individual with the capacity and ability to do whatever needs to be done, a leader with authority and capability, power, is the meaning of Aleph. The second letter, the L, is the Lamed. It is drawn in the form of a shepherd's staff. So it's now someone with the authority and ability, the power to lead, in particular, sheep, to protect them, to nourish them, and to direct them in a manner that is in their interest, to care for them. When we expand it to Eloah, we then find the Hebrew Wah, which is this shepherd, empowered shepherd, has the desire of enlarging and securing a family, a home.
We have a tent peg there.
Right, so. adding to them, increasing them. And then we in Eloa have the hay, which talks about who these sheep are, who the shepherd is protecting. And they would be individuals who are standing up, reaching up, looking up to God. And the last letter is the Yod, which is Yahweh's hand, reaching down to us and lifting us up. That is what's conveyed by this title. That is what Yahweh is interested in doing in our lives. It's a very descriptive word. So there's certainly nothing wrong with translating that word God, although it would be best translated capable shepherd who nurtures and protects and leads those who reach up to him, who pay attention to him, making them secure, enlarging his home with his outstretched and open hand. That would be a comprehensive definition of the word. Larry, I've got a question for you. How many times do you find God's name written in the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms?
7,000.
Yeah, and is it approximately 7,000 or is it exactly 7,000?
Well, if you add what was taken out by the Masoretes and found in their proper place in the Dead Sea Scrolls, it's 7,000 times, exactly.
Yeah, exactly. Well, what's Yahweh's favorite number?
7.
Yeah. So do you think that maybe the fact that there's exactly 7,000 times that we find Yahweh's name in the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms, and
that's
his affinity for 7? Yeah, I don't think so either. Yeah, I don't think so either. So God provides his name in his testimony 7,000 times. What four letters comprise his name all 7,000 times that it's rendered?
It's Yod-Heh-Wah-Heh.
Okay. Now, do we find these letters in any other Hebrew words? Are they exclusive to...
No, we find them in Torah. We find them in many, 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 many names. You know, Yahusha would be an example.
Okay. When Yahweh said that his name was based upon the Hebrew verb Haya, H-A-Y-A-H, would that... Perhaps, since it has Yah in it, and it has two of the four letters in Yahweh's name in it, Haya, would that perhaps serve as a clue as to how to pronounce the two letters that are replicated out of the verb Haya?
Absolutely, as in Yah.
Yeah, is there anybody in that's a Hebrew scholar that believes that it's impossible to pronounce, or that we do not know how to pronounce the Hebrew verb Haya?
No, not or Torah.
Okay. Well, Torah is not a verb. It's a noun. But isn't Haya one of the most common verbs in the entirety of the Hebrew Torah, Prophets, and Psalms?
Yes, it is.
Yep. It means I am, I was. I mean, in first person, I am, I was, I will be. It's the verb to be. That's what it basically is. Haya is the verb to be. It means I am, I exist in first person. And so that's why God, when he's talking to Moshe, says, I am, I was, I am, and I will be. Who I am, who I was, and who I always will be. I'm not changing. I exist, and I'm always consistent. That's the purpose and that verb. It says that God exists and that he is unchanging. Okay, so we know how to pronounce the Yod and the He based upon the verb that he specifically said, this is the basis of my name, Haya. And the book that he introduces his name to us, what is that book entitled?
Bereshith.
Well, Bereshith is in fact the first book of the what? The collection is called what?
Oh, the Tanakh.
Well, that would be no. That the Tanakh is an acronym for Torah, Prophets, and Psalms. So Torah is the answer. Yeah, the Torah is the thing that Yahusha referred to regularly. The Torah is the collection of books that whereby God introduces himself to us.
And lays out his plan for salvation and everything else.
Okay, so we know how to pronounce the yod and the hey from Haya, the verb that's the basis of Yahweh's name. That leaves us with only one letter, the Hebrew wa, right? Because whether we've got two hays and a yod, we know how to pronounce them now. So we've got the Hebrew wa. And
wa is almost always, because it's held in the contraction of names, an O sound.
Is there a wa in the noun Torah?
Yeah. There sure is.
Yeah. It's T-W-R-H.
R-H. It's not right. T-R-H. Right.
No, it's T-W-R-H. Right. And the O sound comes from the Hebrew wa. One of the most common terms ever stated by both Yahweh and by Jews for centuries. In fact, they're greeting. Every time two Jews greet one another, what do they say?
Shalom.
Shalom.
And that's S-H-L-W-M in Paleo Hebrew.
Right. In any Hebrew.
There's the wa again.
Yeah,
you know?
Right. The O sound comes from the wa. Jews for years have distinguished themselves from Goyim. And goyim, goy, is one of the most common terms in Hebrew.
Wa in there.
That's where the O sound comes from, is from the wa.
How about Yosef?
Right. How about Eloah, which is the basis of the word we were considering. El. The basis of El is Eloah. The O sound comes from the Hebrew wa. As a matter of fact, if you were to look at all of the Hebrew words that have a wa in them, the wa is pronounced O about 80% of the time, and when it's not pronounced O, it's pronounced as with a U sound.
There seems to be a group of people, though, that, mm-hmm. that have to have some secretive knowledge, as though Yahweh was coy about his name. I mean, he's not hiding his name. He's getting it out there. That's why it's held in the contraction of Yoel, of
right.
Yosef, of Yoab.
Yes.
You know, I mean, it's out there for us to see, to clearly understand.
Yeah.
We don't have to run to a clergyman.
From Yao Kanan and Yao Shah and Yasha Ya'u and Yirmiyah. I think there's something in the range of 200 names where Yahweh's name is part of those names. In addition, they're presented some 3,000 times in addition to the 7,000 times that we find Yahweh's name written out.
Yeah.
All you have to do to know how to pronounce Yahweh's name, which is comprised of four vowels, one of which is repeated, which are out of the five vowels amongst the 22 letters in the Hebrew alphabet, is to look at any Hebrew lexicon. The yod is pronounced as we pronounce a y in English. The hey is pronounced with the ah sound 99.9% of the time. It is found in a Hebrew word.
So do you think Yahweh changed that in his name just to trip us up?
I mean, all you have to do is have an open mind and a willingness to look at the pronunciation of Hebrew letters and the lexicon used in the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms, including the most important words, like Torah, which has both two of the four letters in Yahweh's name, actually has three of the four, because it has the ah sound at the end that's repeated twice in his name. You look at a word like Yisrael, you know how to pronounce the Y. And Torah tells you how to pronounce the wa and the hey. It's extraordinarily easy, and it's also consistent. Spend a day.
Yeah,
it's worth it. Spend a day. Look at any Hebrew lexicon. Look at the letters, and then look how the words are pronounced.
I think the easiest. I think the proof is in the contraction of the names more than anything.
Yes.
Of course, the A-H is prolific. And since Yahweh, there's the same people that will call Torah law, and they'll call to listen to instructions, obeying commands, as an example, are the same people that seem to have a tendency to believe Yahweh was trying to hide his name. This is not in his nature, folks. It's just not there.
And we have our good friend, our mutual friend, Kirk, calling in from Northern California. Kirk, is there any place in the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms that Yahweh spells his name differently than Yod-Heh-Wah-Heh?
No, sir.
Does he ever get confused about the spelling of his own name?
He never gets confused.
Does Yahweh tell us when he first introduces his name to Moshe that this is my one and only name and the only name that I want to be known as?
Forever.
Yeah, in fact, he does add that. Thank you.
He
does
add all generations.
And all time. So forever. That is correct. I stand corrected. My statement was accurate, but not completely accurate. You're right. He does not only says this is my one and only name and the name that I want to be known as, but he adds forever and for all generations at the end of it. So is there a possibility that God has another name other than Yahweh?
Not a chance.
Do you think that God doesn't know how to pronounce his own name? Do you think there's a chance he doesn't know how to write his own name?
I don't think so.
Is there any chance that the four letters in Yahweh's name are pronounced differently than they are when those letters appear in any other Hebrew word?
It can't happen.
All right, so we have dealt with a couple of issues. One is very common, and I would say that among the complaints that I receive after having written intro to God.org, yadayah.com, questioningpaul.com, is that I use the word God. And so we have explained why that's not an inappropriate word to use. And then I am routinely asked, well, why is God's name important and how do you know the right way to pronounce it, and are there other names that are acceptable? So if we were to tackle those in order, Kirk, why do we think that God's name is important?
Well, because he wants us to know him by that name.
And because he said it's important.
Somebody, well, you can't know somebody if you don't know the name. That's the first thing you do is introduce somebody by name.
And by the way, it made his top 10 list.
And
it's this, yeah, the third statement on the first of the two tablets, saying that belittling his name, diminishing the value of his name, Yahweh is an unforgivable sin.
Absolutely.
So if and by not saying it, by not conveying it, that is the most egregious form of diminishing its influence. That's an unforgivable sin. So we're on pretty solid ground when we say, well, God gave us his name 7,000 times, and the third of the seven statements he wrote in stone says that that his name is so important that demeaning it, devaluing it, taking it out of the lexicon is an unforgivable sin. And when he said, I have only one name, and Yahweh is the name that I want to be known as, it's a pretty open and shut case, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yes, sir. And it, as you pointed out before, if they had kept the name, then there would be no room for somebody running around saying his name is Allah, or
correct,
his name is Lord, or any
right
of the others.
Right, or Jesus.
Or Jesus.
Right. Yeah, if people simply communicated his testimony as he himself related, then there would be no Jesus, there would be no Allah, there would be no Lord. And that all of the religious myths built on those names would be for naught.
No, it'd be, you could have a take it or leave it, but you certainly couldn't go around saying it's something else.
Correct.
I mean, without everybody knowing it.
Right.
Can I make one little quick comment?
Sure.
Because
sure.
I called in, well, first of all, I wanted to thank Larry and William and JB and them when you were out of, and his wife when you were out of town. They did a real good job. And
yeah, they did.
Appreciated it
thank
on our end. And, but the comment I was going to make is years ago, you know what the Oxford Dictionary is, the big six, one that has all 600,000 words
mm-hmm.
that you usually only find in a library like the Library of Congress or the,
mm-hmm.
or some of the big universities. It was read to me what Obey Mings from the Oxford Dictionary at one time.
Mm-hmm.
I may be paraphrasing a little bit, but basically one of the meanings down there, about four or five down, I think, was to run to the slayer with great anticipation.
Uh-huh.
Or the meaning of obey, which would be like, and it was explained, it was mentioned that, like, your father has some great news for you, and you would run with happiness to run to him to hear what he has to say, which would be most appropriate. If you used it in that context, that would be true. Of course, it has evolved into a totally different word than that. But, I mean,
yeah, of course, there is also no Hebrew word for running to the seder in great anticipation. I would agree.
It actually has some other meanings in old English.
It is that today obey means that you accept whatever is being ordered. It is almost always used in conjunction with law or a command. You obey the order, you obey the law. And it's very seldom used out of the context of a command or law. And of course, we spoke about the 10 statements that Yah etched in stone. There was only one of the 10 that was written in the imperative mood, which could potentially convey a command. Only one of the 10. 9 of the 10 are not. So that cannot be 10 commandments. You could have one commandment, but unfortunately the one that was written in the imperative mood is the one that is wholly volitional, which is to value your father and mother, and it's speaking of our heavenly father and spiritual mother. All the wonderful insights, Kirk. I understand you have to go, but if you can stay with us, we'd love to have you continue. Join us when Shattering Myths continues after the news and commercials at the top of the hour.